Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Today we discuss the opioid epidemic. Numerous efforts have been undertaken on the national, state, and local levels to combat this insidious addiction problem. How well are they working? And what about the role of the pharmaceutical industry that produces the painkillers that have hooked so many? Our first guest is Howard Weissman, Executive Director of the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse. Howard, nice to see you again. Thanks for coming
in. Good to be with you.
Can you give me a general overview of how serious a problem we have in this area?
Yeah. St. Louis, Missouri, like the rest of the country, is still in the throes of the worst drug epidemic in American history. Last year, about 714 people died in the St. Louis area. By all indications, this year will be worse. As you know, nationally, last year, 65,000 people died from drug overdoses, more than the number who died in the entirety of the Vietnam War. And we still deal with an acute shortage of effective and affordable treatment, and the amount of money allocated to expand treatment, prevention, and harm reduction is still woefully inadequate.
You paint a very dismal picture, Howard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's it is a uniquely bad public health emergency. Unfortunately, even though there's a lot of talk about it, there still isn't a lot of action with respect to directing and diverting the resources to support real and effective change.
Who is suffering most? Are we talking young people, as is often the case with drug issues?
The people who are dying are not teenagers, mm-hmm. by and large, although deaths have occurred as young as 12. But the people who are dying are young adults, 25 to 45. Who's most impacted? Opioids are everywhere. They're not just in urban areas, but they are in suburban and rural areas. Addiction is an equal opportunity destroyer, but the people, of course, who are sort of most impacted are the people with the fewest resources to combat it. It's hard to find treatment if you have insurance, and it's very, very difficult to find assistance if you don't have insurance or other resources.
Is it the opioids that is killing people, or is it heroin? Because my understanding is that because heroin is so cheap now, people who are addicted to opioids are turning to it.
That's exactly right. And the gateway to heroin for 4 out of 5 people are prescription painkillers. Heroin is increasingly being cut with fentanyl and fentanyl's derivatives. Fentanyl is 50 to 100 times stronger than heroin, and some of the derivatives, like carfentanyl, 10,000 times stronger than morphine. Carfentanyl, as many of your listeners know, is an elephant tranquilizer and a minuscule amount, an amount the size of a grain of salt. Can be fatal.
You mentioned just before you went on the air, and I'll get back to the issue at hand here, but I'm curious as to what you meant when you said that one of our most serious opioid epidemics was a couple hundred years ago.
Yeah, this is not the first time America has been in the throes of an opiate epidemic. In the 19th century, shortly after the Civil War, there were large numbers of returning soldiers who were dependent on morphine, the morphine that they were given from war injuries. They suffered from what was called soldier's disease, which was a sort of a combination of physical and psychological pain. But it wasn't just soldiers. It was sophisticated society ladies who were taking their children's cough suppressant, laudanum, which was a tincture. It was a combination of alcohol and opium. And hundreds of thousands of people found themselves dependent on opiates. And the situation continued for quite a long time. In 1895, Bayer, you know, the aspirin people, came out with a new wonder drug. It was a phenomenally effective cough suppressant, worked for diarrhea as well. And it was a much better analgesic than their aspirin was. The drug was considered very safe, and the prestigious Boston Medical and Surgical Journal, the precursor to the New England Journal of Medicine, said there was no danger of acquiring a habit. In fact, it was so safe that that Bayer's new drug, along with sometimes cocaine, was considered a safe way to help people kick their morphine habit. Hmm. And Bayer's new drug was heroin. So obviously the Boston Medical and Surgical Journal called that one wrong. Hmm. And America continued to wrestle with a terrible incidence and prevalence of opioid addiction. And really the way forward, the way out that time was increased. And this is going to be very unpopular in this day and age with this with our current administration, was increased government regulation. Mm-hmm. The passage of the Pure Food and Drug Act back in 1906, it forced manufacturers to at least disclose what was in their products. So people who were buying stuff off of wagons, they now knew whether or not there was opium in there. They cracked down on the use of opium and opiates. The Harrison Narcotics Act, 1914, regulated the sale. And doctors then, and really only then, started prescribing and recommending opiates for very short periods of time. And that continued for almost a century. Where doctors were very wary about prescribing opiates because they knew how addictive they were, went on for almost 100 years until the exact same thing happened. The New England Journal of Medicine published a letter to the editor that a couple of people had examined medical files of patients in hospitals and determined that less than 1% of hospitalized patients developed an addiction to the opioids they were given while hospitalized. And that letter was cited over 600 times and became a large part of the marketing campaign of one particular drug company that had a vested interest in expanding the application of its new timed release.
So
opioid.
We have, as a society, been addicted to these things for 150 years, and it's ongoing, obviously, but worse now than it ever has been.
Right. Opioids have been highly addictive since opium was discovered.
Let's start with the doctors, because it seems to me, from what I've been reading and hearing, that physicians share a large part of the blame for this because they're quick to – because people demand pain relief, doctors are quick to prescribe opioids.
Right. The vast majority of doctors are not bad actors. The vast, vast majority of doctors only want to help their patients. And you cannot underestimate – how much doctors have been influenced by aggressive marketing by Big Pharma. And doctors were persuaded that after years of only prescribing opioids for short periods of time for end-stage cancer pain and post-surgical pain, things like that, they were persuaded that you could safely now prescribe these long-lasting opioids for chronic conditions.
What kind of pressure is being put on Big Pharma then to ease up a little bit on the advertising and take a more responsible approach?
Well, You could argue that Big Pharma is responding. The Purdue Pharma, for example, came out with an abuse deterrent formulation, ADF. Their blockbuster drug is OxyContin. Contin refers to continuous. It is the long-acting, continuous release of oxycodone, mm-hmm. a strong opioid. They argued for many, many years that that drug was not addictive and that the degree to which it people did develop addiction, it was only because they were misusing the drug. They blamed the victim, mm-hmm. in other words. Interestingly enough, as their patent was about to expire, they came up with an abuse deterrent formulation. So if you crushed it, it would just turn into this gooey mess. And what they claimed was that the old version of OxyContin could not be made into a generic drug because it was so addictive and so easily manipulated.
Mm-hmm. So you're concerned about Big Pharma's role in this. What is your specific concern? Is it the advertising? Clearly, there is a demand for the product and probably a need for these products.
So absolutely a need for these products. Sure. You know, my concern about Big Pharma is really the same concern I and anybody would have about sort of unregulated and unmonitored businesses that are selling products that affect the public health. I think you could argue that virtually 100% of the time, the demand for profit will supersede the public health needs.
And there is plenty of profit there.
Yeah. After Purdue Pharma introduced OxyContin in 1995, I believe, within 3 or 4 years, they were generating $3 billion in sales.
Money talks in all industries and in politics, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. I'm going to take a break now. Howard Weissman, Executive Director of the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse, is our guest. We're talking about the opioid epidemic and taking a look at Big Pharma's role in this and other issues as well. We'll continue this conversation in just a moment. If you'd like to be a part of it, give us a call. 382-8255 is the number. You can send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org, or if you would prefer a tweet, we'll take that at STL On Air. This is St. Louis On the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now to continue our conversation with Howard Weissman, Executive Director of the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse here. We're talking about the opioid epidemic and Big Pharma's role in it. Howard, let's talk about government's role in this. There are a couple of things going on. Governor Greitens announced some months ago that he was going to implement a prescription drug monitoring service. Now, that's still kind of in limbo, as I get it. Mm-hmm. Attorney General Hawley's got a lawsuit against three large pharma companies. Mm-hmm. Are things such as this likely to have any impact, do you think?
Well, while Big Pharma certainly does have a role to play, and they're largely responsible for this vast reservoir of unneeded pain medication that are just laying in wait for people in medicine cabinets all over the country, I don't know how successful Attorney General Hawley's going to be, or any of the other 41 attorneys general who are bringing suit against the drug companies, because it's not like suing the tobacco companies. When used properly for a short period of time, these are wonderful medications that have relieved great suffering. The drug companies are very, very good at blaming the victim and suggesting that anybody who becomes addicted has misused the product in some way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. I think that the drug companies are beginning to acknowledge that they do have a role in creating this problem, and I'd really like to see them voluntarily begin to have a role in the solution. funding prevention programs, medication-assisted treatment, other things that are likely to, you know, help us work our way out of this.
Missouri is the only state, I believe, in the country that doesn't have officially have a prescription drug monitoring service here. They're kind of kicking that around. I don't know what the delay is, but it doesn't speak well for our trying to tackle this problem on that level.
No, a prescription drug monitoring program statewide is a necessary but insufficient condition. I mean, you have to have that to begin to rein this in. The executive order that Governor Greitens signed established a statewide database using Express Scripts data to determine what doctors or what pharmacies might be dispensing large amounts of opioids, but doesn't track patient information, so it doesn't really prevent doctor shopping. The county-by-county solution that was started in St. Louis County by Dr. Faisal Khan is terrific. Based on all the best practices, the one benefit of being last is you get to benefit from everyone else's mistakes. Dr. Khan did that and has crafted a very solid program that now covers, I think, about 78% of the people, 90% of the providers in Missouri. But until Jeff City gets its act together and passes a statewide program, we're going to continue to be a national embarrassment.
In the meantime, I guess I gather Express Scripts is having difficulty coming up with some sort of a computer program to make this work.
Yeah, there's some issues getting that off the ground. You know, since you brought up Express Scripts, I'm going to say this, and I don't have – I told you that profit will trump the public health virtually every time. You know, Express Scripts – is engaged in its own opioid initiative that is – they are on their own as a pharmacy benefit manager are doing everything they can to make sure that opioids are used briefly and safely. Their efforts are designed to get people to get off these drugs as quickly as possible, meaning they make less money. Mm-hmm. They're not having to refill prescriptions. They're reaching out to people at home. They're working at the pharmacy level, and they're working with these folks' doctors. And that's extraordinary. You know, in the corporate world, I think it's nice to see that we have a good corporate citizen here in St. Louis.
Well, in that case, it's good to have them working with the government. We have a number of calls. Let's get as many in as we can, Howard Weissman. And we'll begin with Jim, who is calling from St. Louis. Jim, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. The question I have for your guest is, I know that these prescription drugs have to be approved by the FDA as being safe and effective. And I had read at some point that when these drugs were submitted by the drug companies for approval, they reported to the FDA that there was minimal likelihood of addiction.
Yeah.
And that seems to be an obvious falsehood. And did they also mislead doctors so that doctors weren't truly aware of the issues, the potential issues with these meds? And if so, did these companies engage in what amounts to criminal acts simply for profit?
Well, I mean, the short answer is yes. There were some bad actors in Big Pharma. Purdue Pharma, for example, had to admit to some serious wrongdoing and in 2006 paid a $600 million fine for its misleading claims. Some of their executives were convicted of misdemeanor fraud. They were given probation and they personally put up another $35 million. Is that sufficient? Given the harm that they created? Of course not. It was a slap on the wrist. It was a rounding error for those folks. But Purdue Pharma has been, I think, especially malevolent almost in the degree to which they misled doctors and FDA regulators.
Speaking of consequences, we're going to hear from Sheila now, and she's going to be addressing the ultimate consequence of this problem. Sheila, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Thank you for your show. I think it's the most important show we have in St. Louis. I'd like it to go worldwide, by the way. But anyway, my son tragically died, and it was a very painful death. After getting misinformation from six hospitals and about 44 doctors, and I'm told through Robert Kennedy Jr. and the Mercury project that he's working on and the Vaxxed Revealed. And Dr. Tenpenny, Sherry Tenpenny, that the doctors are not reading the inserts on the medications that they're prescribing. And they're just, it's underwritten. Our media and Big Pharma is controlling just about everything, including our media. And they're not covering these shows on media, and that's why I love you all so much. You're very courageous to have this show. And I'm on a mission to make St. Louis the healthiest city in the world because my three grandchildren are growing up here.
Sheila,
and
thank
you. I need your help.
Sheila, well, thank you for the call. And, of course, we're sorry for the loss that you have experienced. Mm-hmm. But keep up your good work. Want to comment on that, Howard?
Well, I think she's certainly correct that Big Pharma exerts great big influence. They have a lot of money. They have a very active and potent lobby in Washington, and they have great reach. I mean, many people saw the 60 Minutes Washington Post piece last month showing the degree to which Big Pharma has now sort of infected Congress. Where Tom Marino, Representative Marino from Pennsylvania, sponsors a bill that's portrayed as something that will help senior citizens get their desperately needed medication. But what it really is, it's a wolf in sheep's clothing that completely renders the DEA unable to investigate drug distribution companies.
What about federal dollars to be used in this effort?
The drug epidemic continues to suffer the fate of everything else related to alcohol and other drugs, and that is stigma and misunderstanding around addiction. President Obama allocated $1 billion over the next 2 years in 2016 towards the opioid epidemic, and that sounds like a lot of money. But when you consider that the government allocates $24 billion each and every year for HIV/AIDS, you see that it's a drop in the bucket. You know, they just estimated the cost of the opioid epidemic to be $504 billion on the American economy. There is nothing that comes close to that in terms of social costs, social harm, death, destruction, and until there's more effective advocacy, their dollars are going to be in short supply.
I'm going to take one more call now from Gary, and I think he opens up yet another front on this. Go ahead, Gary. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you. You betcha. So I'm an emergency physician, and I'm actually a member of the Technical Advisory Committee for the St. Louis County Prescription Drug Monitoring Program. Mm. And I'd like to call attention to the Joint Commission for Accreditation of Healthcare Organizations, because in 2001, they followed the advice of the American Pain Society and instituted pain as a fifth vital sign in hospitals.
Right.
And that came in about the same time that doctors were being graded on patient satisfaction.
That's right.
And, you know, if you come and ask, I feel like if someone would have come and asked us in the emergency department what was going to happen 10 years from now, we could have predicted exactly what's happening. And I'd really like to see more focus on the Joint Commission and their culpability in this avoidable tragedy. So thank you. I'll take my comments off the air.
Yeah, I appreciate your comments. And the Joint Commission, as you know, has sort of distanced itself, has denied that they made pain the fifth vital sign, only said that they felt like pain should be treated more aggressively, and they never recommended opioids. There's blame to go all around. And it seems to me that the situation is so dire and so desperate that the focus must be on solutions. The solutions will involve a combination of expanding our treatment infrastructure and finally really making prevention a priority, because the problem in this country is not about painkillers. It's about pain. It's about withstanding the emotional pain that life deals all of us. And I think until we really get serious about intervening in kids' lives at a very early stage, helping them manage their emotions, deal with the discomfort, the pain, the toxic stress, the adverse childhood experiences, the things that lead to unhealthy choices later on, we're going to have a hard time reining this in.
We're going to have to wrap this up, but I do want to ask you this question because Lauren has emailed concerning Imodium, an opioid receptor, she said, which should help lead to her son's death because he was addicted to opioids. Do you know anything about that, Imodium?
No, I thought that was a medicine for diarrhea.
I really don't know, but apparently it's an over-the-counter product that can be a real problem. I wish we had more time, unfortunately. But maybe should have gotten into this, but we'll look into that, Lauren. Thank you for your email. And thanks to you, Howard Weissman. We've got to wrap it up. Howard is the executive director of the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse here in St. Louis. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.